Welcome in, everybody, to the How Not to Be a Youth Pastor podcast. Everybody's favorite podcast. At least everybody's favorite ministry podcast.
I wouldn't even set the bar that low.
Yeah?
We are their favorite.
Ahead of Stuff You Should Know, ahead of all of the murder mystery podcasts, ahead of the Joe Rogan Experience himself.
Yeah, I was just going to pull out Joe Rogan.
The How Not to Be a Youth Pastor podcast. Coming at you, Kyle and Derek, back for another episode, talking every single week how not to be youth pastors, except for taking a week off last week because of Easter.
Yeah, we did do that, and there was a part of us, I think, that was really, really feeling like we dropped the ball and failed, but then here was my thought. If you're listening to this podcast, odds are you're in ministry.
That's true.
And so you didn't have time to listen to this anyway.
You ain't listening this week. That's for sure. This episode's sponsored by this 300-piece tub of Double Bubble.
Yep. America's original.
Yeah, it's the OG for sure. We have an event coming up here with our youth ministry. Are you kidding me? You're going to eat one? Ha, it's sealed.
It is sealed.
What
Dang
are you
going
to do about it? No, we have an event coming up with our youth ministry that we call Spring Formal, which is a lot like... I've described it to some people. I don't know if I can say this on air.
Yes, you should.
As prom without the gyrating. Because we don't do like a dance or music or anything, not because we're like super old school Baptist, but because that's just not how the event is structured.
You mean you're not trying to recreate the plot of Footloose?
What a missed opportunity. No, we do. So we've done it for a few years now. Just encourage students to bring their friends, get all dressed up in fancy outfits, come for a dinner and then an entertainment portion where we do like a bunch of little games, prizes, tons of giveaways. But the theme this year is Candyland. And so for our dessert bar, we have just like a ton of different candies. I've got like $100 worth of candy in my office.
No.
Double Bubbles and Sour Patch Kids, Jolly Ranchers, M&Ms.
The sugar addict in me was just like frothing at the mouth when I walked in, for sure.
Yeah, it looks good. I'm excited about it. My wife does just a phenomenal job every year taking our gym at the church and transforming it into a cool space. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited about it. But Derek, that's not what our quick question is about this week. Our quick question is, so today we're recording this on April 3rd. It'll release on April 4th.
So shout out to Nathan.
Shout out to a great friend of the show, our audio producer, Nathan, who doesn't know he's getting this with a 24-hour notice. That would be more like 16 hours by the time we're done here. No, I wanted to ask you, Derek, we have a very, very important phenomena coming up on Monday. I don't even know if you're aware of this. But portions of our good old United States of America will be experiencing a total solar eclipse on Monday. Did you know about this?
Nope. I do now.
You haven't spent enough time on social media or something, apparently. I don't know. But so there's a total solar eclipse happening. I believe that the path of totality, where it's like 100% covered, it's like Austin, Texas, and then like kind of St. Louis, Indianapolis. So it like comes up through Austin and then veers to the east. And so then it'll go over like Western New York kind of space and then into
Canada. Why does New York get everything all the time?
Why does Texas get everything
That's
all the
fair.
Time? So I was going to ask you if you were going to like go down to Missouri for...
Yep.
For the eclipse on Monday.
Clearly
you
I've
didn't
made,
know it was happening.
Clearly
so
I've made
not.
All kinds of plans. I had no clue. That's actually, part of me is really bummed that it's happening though, because I can't go see it. Because that happens like what, every couple of decades or something like
well,
that?
Well, so it happens somewhere on Earth every 2 years, I think. It happened, the last one in the United States, I think was 2017. I don't know if it's like always the same path across the United States or not, but I have seen, I was really proud of the internet, which doesn't happen often, but I saw somebody post on Facebook like, hey, Christian friends, what are your thoughts on the eclipse and like biblical end times? And a lot of the responses I saw were essentially, it means nothing. America's not special. Because, like, oh, it, like, there's this solar eclipse happening over America. What does it mean for the end times? And everybody's like, this happens every 2 years all across the world. The fact that it's in America this year means absolutely nothing. So I was really proud of the internet for that.
That would be a really good topic at some point. Because I feel like that in
the end times?
Yeah. You know, because here's my argument for any end times argument. Jesus himself said not even the angels know when it's happening. Mm-hmm. So why do we
try to figure it out?
You know, and that's oversimplifying it. I know you got to be ready and all those different things, but it could be an interesting topic at some point.
You know, I feel like, yeah, so it that would be fun. I think we should absolutely do an episode on that. The other thing I wanted to bring up, I heard on the radio on my way in this morning that inmates at a prison in New York, and this prison is in that totality path, prison inmates in New York are suing the state of New York because the prison is violating their religious freedoms by not letting them go outside and see this eclipse when it's passing over their prison, because and they're claiming that the eclipse and celebrating the eclipse outside is a part of their religion that they have, and it's a religious experience. Thoughts?
Feels like a loophole. But who am I to say? I don't know. I mean, everyone's got their own spin on things. I would say if you're toting that argument in the name of Christianity, it's a pretty...
Yeah, I don't know that I saw it was specifically okay. Christianity, which makes me feel a little bit better about it.
And that's where I could see there's here's what I have learned. There's a lot of unique, quote-unquote, religions out there. And well, so I well, can't...
My religion requires that I walk around the streets of my community free. So if I ever end up in prison, I'm going to just claim that as violating my religious freedoms because my religion requires that I be not under the supervised rule of a prison. So
that's fair.
How about that for a loophole?
We should get back on track.
We probably should. Then again, we're only 7 minutes in.
Oh, we got all kinds of time then.
I am regretting how we opened the show. Because we have this beautiful 300-piece tub of Double Bubble as our sponsor.
Naturally.
Kind of feel like the sponsor for this episode should have been the NRA.
Yep.
Because we are going to be talking about we're gonna be talking about church security and security teams and however you want to phrase it or describe it. Because this is something that I think is a good conversation that we can have as far as 21st century churches goes. It's an unfortunate conversation that we need to be having in 2024, but I think it's important for us to talk about what should a quote unquote security team look like at a church. What are some things to keep in mind, as well as what should it not look like? And so, Derek, I wanted to just kind of start off by maybe getting a 30-second description from you, and then I'll follow, of, like, what do you guys do currently at your church? What's your church context, church size? Do you guys have any sort of quote unquote church security or church response team? And what does that look like?
Yeah. So we're a church of about, I'm going to call us 170 or so. And we have a security team. It is usually one person who just kind of, with how our building is structured, where you sit can kind of cover the whole building. We kind of have some protocols that the security team, if something were to happen, here's how to handle it, so on and so forth. And we also would consider a secret security team. And these are individuals that week in and week out, there are certain expectations with their professional background that they have skills to offer. And so every single week, they are strategically placed throughout the church for very specific reasons and that kind of thing. So to be perfectly frank, it's something that I desire to increase over time, and I can share those reasons here in a little bit. But that's kind of what we have. You know, it's in a smaller church, you can't, like, I don't want to jump, put the cart before the horse here, but I know of a church in our area that is much larger than us, and they have a legitimate police force that are at the front doors every single week. And obviously in a church, our context, that just sends the wrong message when you're walking sure. in, you know, so that's kind of what we got going on now, but we're kind of looking to increase it here as we go along.
You, yeah. So we are, our church is, you know, 450 to 500, you know, I don't remember if you may have said this, but our church is in a, you know, pretty suburban context. Yep. I'd classify yours more as rural.
Rural, definitely.
You could make the argument that a church existing in rural America can effectively operate as its own, like, everybody there mm-hmm. might be church security.
Yep.
If you know what I mean, but... Yep. So for our church, we have, so, you know, 450, 500 on a Sunday. Derek mentioned, like, your guys' church essentially has one, like, you, everybody enters and exits through one place.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we have two, or we have external fire exits, but there's no right. way you can get in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, nobody's so. Coming in those right. ways. We yes, thank you for clarifying for the fire marshals listening that your church of 170 people has more than one fire exit. but we have, so we have two main points of entry to our church that are right next to each other, but unfortunately they lead to very different avenues of the building. The doors are right next to each other, but they lead different places. And so we have they call themselves an emergency response team, and we will dive in later as to why they call themselves that. But we have... so we have some security cameras, you know, throughout our church. Couldn't tell you how many we have or what the square footage of our building is for some sort of ratio. I don't know. But we have a room where those kind of feed into a monitor. And so typically we've got somebody on a Sunday morning just kind of watching those. And keeping an eye on things from that angle. And then we've got, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8 individuals that are an officially like, you know, a part of the team that morning. And then there are others, it might be a little bit less, maybe, you know, 4 to 6 that are officially on the team that morning. And then there's others that are unofficial members of the team that morning. And so we'll kind of dive in later as to what exactly that looks like, but that basically they're just walking around, and they're not, you know, they're not walking around with AKs slung over the shoulder, you know, announcing they're not standing like two of them on either side of the door as our greeters,
yep,
you know, it's anything like that, but you know, they're around.
Yeah,
is kind of the and I think that's the goal, right? Like you want these people to be spaced out and be around.
Yeah, well, and that's what's so interesting is, you know, I think there's this myth, if you will, where a smaller church doesn't have to worry about these things, right? You know, it kind of feels yeah. like, you know, the bigger the city, the bigger the church, obviously, you know, the more propensity they are to crime. And that's not always the case. Almost, I feel like, and this is not just me speaking in opinion. I mean, I've actually, we're fortunate enough to have some members of our community who actually work in law enforcement, and they are well-versed in a lot of these things. And they say a lot of times these smaller communities are hit harder just because there's less channels for people to go through, you know, to what we've just talked about. You're not getting a gun into some of these mega churches. Why? Because some of them have armed guards at the front, and right. they some church, I literally a couple weeks ago, my wife and I were in a different city in the United States, and we walked through metal detectors on the way into church. It was a big church, but like yeah. it just that was that my point is proven there. But like it just the number of the number of smaller churches that have had gun violence or some kind of threat upon them is way larger than any urban larger church. And so I think that's where churches are vulnerable, in the sense of there's this, I'm going to call it ignorance or naivety, that we're a smaller church, we don't have to worry about those things. And I would say you almost have to worry about them a little more. At least you have to be thinking about them, because odds are stuff's probably not going to happen. But if it does, like, you got to be prepared. And my mind immediately goes to, this is a few years ago now, but there was a church in Texas. And this is, as a result of this event that happened in Texas, is what prompted us to get a security team. Because it was a church identical to our size in a community like ours, where somebody walked in with a gun, caused some violence, some people died. But it was because there was a retired NRA instructor in the building that was carrying a gun that stopped the threat before more people got hurt. And had he not stopped the threat, it would have been dozens of people that would have been killed, you know? So it was in that moment. And I know it's a sombering way to start a podcast, but I think for us, that's where we realized, like, if you're a small church, you're not exempt. Like, you need to be prepared for what's going on.
Yeah. And, it, you know, attacks on not just churches, but other places of worship as well, have greatly increased in the last 20 years. And so it's kind of become more and more common or even necessary to have some sort of team at churches. And like you said, Derek, no matter the size. And so the first step, and this is going to be, this is going to sound really obvious, but the first step for, no, it doesn't matter how you define the teams or what they look like. We'll get to that in a second. The background checks should be the first part of the process. You know, if you are the not to get too far ahead of us, but the security side of things and the medical side of things are kind of the two perspectives we want to bring here. It doesn't matter what though, like, which side somebody falls on. Maybe they fall on both. The background check is going to be the most important part of that. And part of that is going to be like the actual legal background check. Like, if you are running a youth ministry, you should be background checking all of your volunteers before they get plugged in on Wednesday nights.
Same with kids ministry.
Kids ministry, same thing. Anything with minors. You know, you can make an argument you should do that for any of your high level volunteers, no matter, you know, what they're doing in your church. But the security team got to make sure that we get the legal background checks. And then also, hey, let's look into, you know, you're telling me that you work as a nurse at a hospital down the road. It might not be a bad idea for me to, like, see if I can actually verify that and see if it's true. Not because I don't trust you, but because I need to make sure that I do my due diligence.
Yeah, especially because if, because the other part of it, I feel like what we don't always think about is, obviously, when something happens, more often than not, if you follow the proper channels, you're legally okay. But when they take you through a concealed carry class, they basically told me, at least, that when you pull that trigger, you become liable for everything that happens.
Yeah.
So even if you are 100% in the right, you are legally covered, you had no other course of action, you are still going to be treated as somebody who just shot somebody. Yeah. So you're going to be questioned. You're going to probably be put and detained in a cop car, you know, because they need to get the story straight before anything else happens. And that's like a scary reality that we, like, when you sign up for a church security team, it's not just so you can look mighty and powerful. Like, you have to understand you're in charge of people and you're in charge of what you're doing on the security side and the medical side. Like, if you just start giving CPR to somebody and you don't know what you're doing and, like, you break some ribs, guess who's probably liable?
It's you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. 100%. You know? And so it's like, it's one of those things, like, we just need to not be scared into not doing things, but, like, we can't just brush over these things because they are real, legitimate realities. And even as we sit in this podcast, I'm like, man, I gotta update some of our stuff here at church, because this is real stuff.
Yeah. And you know, Derek mentioned it briefly, but the full disclosure for this episode would be that both Derek and myself have our concealed carry permits. You know, we, and there is a high level of responsibility that comes with that. I don't think either of us carry 24/7. You know, there are times that we tend to carry and times that we don't. I'll speak personally. If I'm wearing sweatpants, I'm probably not carrying. And you know, like some stupid stuff like that. Like there's a secure aspect of it that needs to happen. But I think that if somebody is, you know, they come to you and say, hey, I want to be a part of the security team. I have my concealed carry permit, blah, blah, blah. If it's like a status symbol for them, if they want to do it, and I don't want to offend anybody by this, but it's the only way I can think of to describe it. If somebody wants to be a part of the security team because they are a redneck who is super proud of the fact that they own a gun, that's not the first person that I want to put onto the security team. And while we're talking about background checks and doing due diligence, just because somebody says they have their permit to carry does not mean they actually have their permit to carry. And so, hey, can I see your license? I don't know if that, I'm sure it's something that you can go down to like your local sheriff station and look up to see if that is actually true. Because I've seen it happen where a church security team had somebody on their team who they found out later didn't actually have a permit to carry. And that was,
you're talking about a liability problem. Yeah.
Right.
Holy
yeah.
Buckets.
We'll get to some liability issues in a minute, but actually, you know what? That actually might just be a good conversation to have now. Cause you mentioned it, like you're responsible for everything. And even from the stand, like there are churches or not churches, sorry. There are states that we are seeing, Good Samaritans processed on a different level of the law than, you know, we've maybe seen previously.
Yep.
And so how does that affect how church security teams need to operate?
I think the biggest, most integral thing you have to do is you need to know what the laws are in your state, because the variability is wild. Our gun laws, and I'm not just, I know we keep going back to gun laws, but this liability covers everything. Like I said, like if you're not medically authorized to do certain things, there's a lot of red tape that you have to, like my wife works in healthcare, and it's not as simple as you just give mouth-to-mouth somebody that tips over on the ground. I mean, like there's a lot of things you have to consider. And so the best thing I would encourage you to do, if you are a church, read it up on yourself, kind of get a basis. But like one thing that I have had the luxury of that I would encourage other people to find is find a sheriff, find a law enforcement, like more than just your local police station in town. Like find somebody who really knows the book and what it says, and buy them lunch, invite them out to your building. You might have to schedule it months in advance, but say, hey, we want to have an emergency response system. What are we legally allowed to do? And probably more importantly, what are we not legally allowed to do? Because there are things you probably might think that you have a liberty to do that you might not, you know, and I'd rather find that out before anything were to happen so you can train that in effectively. And so, you know, I would honestly just start there. Mm-hmm. Like find someone who knows their stuff in your state, in your county, in your context, who can speak definitively, this is your legal right and this is not.
Yeah, having that strong relationship, you know, ongoing too, with somebody like a sheriff's office. Our church is well placed. Like we're like a mile from the sheriff's office for our county, and so that, you know, and we have like we've got somebody fairly high up in that office that attends our church, and so there's some, you know, pre-existing relationship there as well, but we've developed relationship with that office for that reason. Like we want to make sure we're doing things the right way. We want to make sure that we are informed when it comes to some of these things. And so I think that that's a great place to start. I also think that, you know, leading well into the next thing is that having some of these people sign up for your team is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, hold on, before we move on, I had another thought. When it comes to, you know, not everybody should be giving CPR, I don't want people to hear that and then use it as an excuse not to give CPR. If some, like, preemptively learn it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like, okay, we don't have anybody here trained to give CPR, the answer is not, we just won't give CPR. The answer is, get somebody trained.
Yes.
You know, invest, if you're a senior pastor, invest in yourself and your staff,
mm-hmm.
In that way. You know, spend the money to bring somebody from the Red Cross out so that they're first responder certified or you know, whatever mm-hmm. the different certification levels are.
Yep.
Do stuff like that so that people then are equipped to handle some of these situations.
Yep.
And I think that if you are in a position where you are on a team like this in any capacity, I would encourage you to know where the lines are, know what you can and cannot do, but when the time comes, you need to be ready to actually act and bravely step into that and let the consequences play out later. This is going to sound terrible, but if you need to take action to save a life or lives, and then, you know, the judicial system comes after you and things don't work out great for you, that is what it is. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, mm-hmm. like saving a life is a win.
Yep.
Or multiple lives yep. is a win. But that leads into ongoing training.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's another important thing with this. Derek, do you guys do anything when it comes to, you know, further training? Yeah. You know, not that you're working with a team of 50 individuals.
Yeah. I mean, something we have not done yet is security training, but it was last year we actually had a church-wide medical training event.
Nice.
So, which was super cool. So yeah. Anyone who wanted to come could come. So they taught us CPR. We weren't CPR certified, you know, whatever it is. But like, we know the techniques. They even did stuff like, you know, trauma kits and like if there's a really bad wound, like here's how to make a tourniquet out of something or whatever else. And so that was really cool just to kind of have that exposure because, I mean, guys, like this happens. Like it does. It was at a Christmas Eve service that we had a few years ago where somebody collapsed in service, you know, and like had a heart attack. And it was like, you just don't expect these things to happen. It's like, yeah, I probably should be prepared. But when they actually happen, it's like, oh my goodness. And thankfully we had some things in place at that time. But to kind of just circle back, we have not done any formal security training. I would like to. It kind of goes back to that. I think there, if you can have a sheriff come in and just sit down, you know, with kind of some various things. Now, again, we've had some pastoral staff conversations with these guys, and we've had some training there. So, like,
yeah.
Here's what I would advise. Here's some different protocols to do. But like it can even start small. Like you can, I think if nothing else, like I feel like I'm rambling. If nothing else, I think having the staff that are employed at the church, having at least a basis knowledge of medical and security protocol should be a minimum. Cause then if nothing else, at least somebody knows what to mm-hmm. do. And so we've done medical, we've done security training, and those have both been very, very helpful for us.
Yeah, I remember we did a training with our staff. I think it was probably like 3 years ago, where we had we have an AED machine.
Yep,
we do here too. At the church, and mm-hmm. so we had somebody come in and like train our staff how to use it. Now, I hope none of our listeners have ever had to use one, but the thing about an AED machine, especially the ones that they make now, is that it literally walks you through every single yeah. step. Like, it's actually kind of difficult to screw up. You say that when you're calm.
Yeah.
In the moment, it's very, very helpful to have mm-hmm. those verbal cues because, you know, you need that. But I remember as we were going through it as a staff, I think that in situations like this, knowing your strengths and weaknesses and knowing how to leverage those is really important. Mm-hmm. We have one of the people on our staff who they would be the first to tell you this. And so I feel like I could say this, like their best use in a emergency situation like that would be to be the person that walks outside and flags down the ambulance when it gets there and points the people in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, being near the medical situation and potential blood is not their strong suit.
Yep.
That's not good for them.
Yep.
Verbally directing a large crowd of people would not be their strong suit in that moment, because they know themselves well. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, like I'm going to assign you to that position.
Yep.
Because I know that you can be helpful there. Mm-hmm. And I know that you wouldn't be helpful in other places. And so knowing your team in situations like that, and training can help discover some of those things. I know that our security team has had, you know, like they'll schedule a Saturday where they book out the whole church building and they have security trainings. Now, I don't know what exactly they do. I've never seen evidence of like paintball fights in the church.
That would be
that feels like what I would do.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I also like, there's no way they're doing like, I don't know if they're doing like airsoft. Like, I've never seen any evidence of that either, like tiny little holes in the wall or like, you know, cracked TV screen.
If they were doing airsoft, you'd know, because there would be just like the
right.
little BBs everywhere.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, I don't know what exactly, they must not actually be, I mean, maybe they're firing like Nerf guns or something, but I don't know exactly what they do, but they run through a bunch of like live action situations. And they mustn't just not be firing anything. Maybe it's a squirt gun. Maybe it's a water gun.
That, I like that plan.
That'd be fun.
Baptism and security training all at once.
Perfect. But I think that there can be some benefit to that as well, where, you know, it's like any situation. If you've rehearsed it, then you're going to be a little bit more natural if you ever have to actually respond in that way.
Yeah.
But I want to just kind of have a little bit of a conversation, Derek, about, you know, in maybe this is our opinion, but what should these church teams actually look like? And so I want to start on the medical side, because I feel like it's kind of simple. The medical people should be able to respond to medical situations.
That's probably a good start.
Do we need to go further than that? I feel like that's pretty much it, right?
I think at the very least, they should be aware of where everything's at. You know,
yeah.
I feel like that's, you talk about the calmness, mm-hmm. right? Like there's, sure. Yeah, I could figure out where it is. Like, yeah, you probably could. But when someone's bleeding out on your floor,
yep, having a seizure,
you're not going to be calm, cool, look at all, let me just go through the cabinets. Like, you need to know definitively, here's where the AED is, here's where, you know, the medical supplies are, you know, because the thing that I should have mentioned this earlier, the one thing that rural churches struggle with that you have to be aware of, and this is why it goes back to why having teams is critical. I know definitively we're a 13-minute ambulance ride from my building to the nearest ambulance, 13 minutes. And in the context of a situation, 13 minutes is not a long enough time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the same person who helped us with our training is well-versed in this stuff. And he single-handedly said, him and his family said, we will buy the church an AED because if somebody goes down in your church, they're not making it.
Yeah, 13 minutes is too long.
Yep. You know, and so like it goes back to this training thing, like, the medical team needs to know where that AED is, because if there's any situation where they stop breathing or their heart issues, that AED is your best tool. You got to know where that is. You got to make sure the batteries are recharged.
Yep.
You got to make sure that the supplies are up to date because all that stuff expires.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes they beep, sometimes they blink, but make sure you're checking that. It's not one of those, I buy it once and I'm good for the next 10 years. You got to make sure that stuff's ready to go. You also got to make sure that like your medical kit is fully stocked so that when something really does go down, you don't realize that the youth pastor pulled all the gauze for some kind of mummy game or, you know, some kind of crazy thing like that. Like, you got to make sure you know where the medical kit is and make sure.
Also,
it's
don't
fully
be
stocked.
The youth pastor getting supplies from the medical
please
supply
don't.
Kit.
Yeah,
for
please
your
don't.
Game.
Go to Walmart.
Wow, look at that.
You can tell we're
hashtag not a sponsor.
That's how you know we're clicking at 110 episodes in, whatever it is.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, I think just like beyond that though, I mean, the medical team just need to know what's going on. And, you know, I think if nothing else, I think it's even valuable to, if you know there are medical professionals in your congregation, even if it's, I always think of like the people in the airplane that got in the exit row. They didn't plan to be on the exit row. They just were. So just, I think having that kind of conversation, like saying, hey, God forbid if something happened, like, and you're here, would you be willing to step in, you know? And like,
yeah, having knowledge of who the doctors and the nurses and the, you know, EMTs and other medical professionals are in your church, where you can't, you know, that you can go to them like, hey, would you be willing? You don't have to be an official member of the team. Just come to church whenever you normally do. If a situation arises, would you be willing to step in and help? And yeah, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say yes, because that's what they do.
Totally.
That's what they're trained for. It's like going to a family function and being asked to pray because you're the pastor. Like, yeah, that's sure, I can do that. Like, now, yep, it's a little bit different because God doesn't listen to my prayers just because I'm a pastor better than others. But medical response people usually know what they're doing much better than I do when comes to, you know, different medical things. But I do think there's an important, like, hey, your team doesn't just have to be the people that are officially scheduled for that week. You know, anybody on your team or other lay people can step in if necessary.
And one thing before we go to security, statistically speaking, you are more prone to having a medical emergency than a security emergency.
100%.
And so that's like where you need to be aware of that reality and not beef up your security team in such a way that, you know, an armed tank is not getting through your church building yet. Yeah. When somebody goes down, everyone's looking around like, what do I got to do here?
Yep.
Like, you got to make sure you don't beef up your security yet diminish your medical.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great, great point. So on the security side, you know, there's a couple different roles you could have. I mentioned that our church has a specific room, and when I say room, it might be the size of this table Derek and I are sitting at.
Yeah,
it's a very, very small room. I think two people can sit in it, and that's it. But They have a computer with some, you know, monitor feeds on it for some of the security cameras that we have here at the church. And so they can monitor those. And on a Sunday morning or on a Wednesday night when we have all of our Wednesday night activities, a lot of times they'll have somebody in there just kind of keeping an eye on different things. They've got one or two that are pointed out to the parking lot, different rooms at the church. And their role is like, hey, we just kind of want to sit back, observe from a bird's eye view, literally in some places, because they're usually on the ceiling.
Yeah,
sitting back from a bird's eye view and monitoring things, I think that's a good use for your security team. Good, that's a great place for somebody to volunteer their time for an hour or so. And I think that the security team can do the same thing as the medical team, where sitting in the service. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, just come do your normal thing and be prepared to respond if necessary.
Yeah.
I think that's your greatest assets as a security team. The other one would be, you know, I wrote it down as patrol, but really it's just like, hey, I'm just going to wander around.
Yep.
Check in on some different rooms. You know, maybe it's two people watching the monitors and then occasionally one of them goes for a walk. It's not three people, again, brandishing guns and, you know, wearing Kevlar vests and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I think the goal, I think my biggest thing with a church security team is I love when nobody knows that you're there.
Totally. No question. Because, I mean, that's a whole nother dynamic that I kind of hoped we would touch on is, you want people to feel secure, but not uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, let's just call it what it is. If you are a first-time visitor at our church, okay, in rural Minnesota, and the greeter or the person just outside the door who does not say, you know, St. Francis Police or is not a legal licensed police officer, if they're sitting in our lobby brandishing, openly carrying their weapon, that's uncomfortable to you.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. You know, I as someone who has his CCW, like when I see people open carrying in public, there is a level of heightened emotion that I feel just because not that guns are bad, but just like you don't know who that person is and you don't know what their experience is. You don't know what their training is. You don't know, you know, they could be an NRA professor or instructor, I'm sorry, and be very secure, but you don't know that. Mm-hmm. And so you have to want people to feel secure, yet also not make it feel like I'm never coming back to that church. This is wild. You know, like you, I love that point that the best ones are the ones you don't even know that they're there.
Yep.
And I can say for the law enforcement officers in our congregation, you would never know that they are because they don't wear any police stuff. They don't like that. You'd never know they were carrying a gun, all those different things. Before I forget, while we're talking about security, one thing that we have not touched on is all-encompassing church security protocols. In the sense, here's what I mean by that, is it's good to have a security person on your team patrolling the building, checking on everything else, but like specifically with kids ministry on a Sunday morning, make sure you have protocols that your teachers can call out. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's go to someone like Kyle's context. You're a church of, let's call it 500 people. Odds are, if you're on the security team, you don't know every single person that walks through the door. So when somebody walks down the kids' hallway or in the kids' wing, you just think they're going to pick up their kid just like anybody else. Yet the teacher knows that, oh, that's actually the estranged father or the estranged mother who's not supposed to be here. So I think having some kind of security protocol where if there is something going on that you are aware of, there's a way in which you can get a hold of somebody to come and deal with that. And that goes back to training. But my point is, like, church security should not just be relegated to that team. Obviously, they're doing the heavy lifting. They're doing everything else. But, like, I think you as a pastoral staff training your volunteers, you have to say, here's just some security thing. I'm sure it's the same way on a Wednesday night, saying like, hey, no kids are going off the property, like just wandering. Like there are just certain security things that I think need to be passed on or kind of instructed outside of just your security team that pertain to general security.
Yeah. All of our adult volunteers for our youth ministry, are given, I have like a packet I give them when they first hop on as a volunteer, and some of the stuff in there, like, it spells out, okay, in case of a fire, you'd leave the building. Like, that one should be obvious, but you know, if there's a fire, leave. If there's a tornado, here's the room that we go to.
Yep.
If there's a, I call it an active physical threat because that just sounds better than the alternative.
Yep.
But they are, everybody's made aware of how to lock down our room that we meet in if we need to.
Yep.
And so all of those things, you know, making sure that your volunteers are just have a cursory knowledge of.
Totally.
I think is really, really smart. That's absolutely right. The other thing that you can dive into with a security team and a medical team is when your church has different events going on, you know, hey, can we, like, is there a point where we want to reach out and see if somebody from this team can be present?
Right.
And I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know that there is one, but, you know, if you've got like one adult class meeting on a Sunday night at the church, you know, do you need a security person or can you just wait till everybody's there and then lock the door? If you've got, you know, an event with 200 people there, you know, yeah, maybe we want to have a presence just in case. You know, having all of those protocols in place, like Derek said, like with a kids ministry wing, like how do we lock down this wing? How do we make sure the right people are getting back there and the wrong people aren't getting back there? Having all of those things in place, I think, is really important. The last thing that I wanted to kind of touch on was talking about, we talked a little bit about the liability from a personal standpoint, and I wanted to just briefly touch on liability from the church's perspective. And the reason that this comes to my mind is because I know that for us, I mentioned that we have what is called an emergency response team, and they call themselves that specifically because our insurance company asked them to. They essentially said, we don't want you to call yourselves a security team because it connotates different things. I don't know exactly, you know, what the all of the reasoning behind it was, but essentially our insurance company said, like, if you guys are going to have a legitimate security team, mm-hmm. like, we would have to raise your insurance rates versus an emergency response team, you know, is phrased a little bit differently, and you'd be fine with that. And so I thought that was interesting.
Super smart. Yeah, I had no idea. I think it's kind of just that alone just encompasses this whole concept of just communicate the intentions to all that pertain. This is insurance companies. This is, you know, let your elder board
local law
know.
Enforcement.
Totally.
Elder board, that's a good call.
You know, like, just these are things that, not that you're broadcasting the whole church saying, hey, we're looking to revamp our security team. So, you know, X, Y, Z. But, like, if there is a channel you think at least should know, they might, like, a law enforcement, they might say, yep, we're good. If you need anything, let us know. Cool. It might be a 3-minute conversation. But, like, your law enforcement should know who you are if you're the pastor there or if you're on staff there.
Yeah.
They should know who you are. Heck, I'm going to take another step further. Maybe you should consider blessing them, you know, and taking care of them. All these different things. So, you know, I just think that talk with the people that matter, insurance companies, fire department, first responders, yeah. like talk to them, talk to your local law enforcement, elder board, staff. Just if you can think of somebody that would want to know if there was a major situation going down, who would you have to call? And then start making that list and start talking to them preemptively.
Yeah, and it comes back to building those relationships and having some of those relationships established so that if a situation arises, they're even coming on thinking, okay, I've met with these people before.
Yep.
I can probably expect that they have done X, Y, and Z, and that's going to make their job easier as well.
Yep.
Knowing... having some sort of an expectation as to what they're walking into, with any first responder job, like you could be walking into literally anything, and they know that, and they've experienced it, they've seen it, and so having a little bit of stability, like if I get called there, I know that, you know, some protocol stuff are going to have taken place, and that's comforting.
Yep.
Sweet. Any other last thoughts on church security teams?
No, I think the one thing that we have done, and I'll throw this out because we don't have a video monitoring room, but
sure.
We do have security cameras, and I would advise that, you know, I just think there is, again, typically we've done things in response, you know, reactively as opposed to proactively. Mm. We had somebody vandalize our sidewalk once.
Nice.
And so I was like, no idea who it was. Why? Because there's no security camera. Well, now we have a security camera. You know, and I think that there are some really, you can do these things without breaking the bank in your church budget. And so I would just encourage you, like, there are some options out there, whether it's Ring or Blink, which is Amazon's brand of stuff. You can get into just enhancing your church security without breaking the bank. And so I look into that and don't let cost be an issue.
I think that there is a... I didn't get that. Siri didn't get that.
No.
I hope that popped up on the audio. I think there's a, you know, software, some sort of company that you can essentially use old cell phones as security cameras.
Interesting.
And there's like software and you hook it up, get the battery all hooked up and you can use... just like an old phone as a security camera. So even for somebody like, you know, even the lowest budget,
yep.
We've got some solutions.
No,
there's solutions out there for you on this. I think that if Derek and I were to sum up this episode and our advice to churches, it would be communicate and be communicate, check and train and be discreet.
Yeah.
Those are kind of the three talking points, main talking points from this episode. There, you could have just skipped to the 49 and a half minute mark.
We should just do that every episode, like a TLDR, you know, too long, whatever that stands for, and just like, just give a little synopsis of what we talk about.
Then you don't even have to listen to the entire episode. That's brilliant. It'll probably drop our listening numbers, but...
2 to 1.
From 2 to 1. Ah, shoot. That does it for today's episode. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. On behalf of Derek, I think it's about time that maybe we have a little date to the gun range. Goodbye.